Hello, this is Teddy Reese with Sunday Conversation. Today is Sunday, July 15th, 2018. We are halfway through the month of July, the seventh month of the year. We've already crossed that threshold. I understand that little kids have already started the countdown to Christmas, so we are well on the way. Speaking of our kids, they're currently still out for the summer, but parents are gearing up for the children to head back to school. It's time to go do that school shopping and get everything that we need for the year, so that our children will be prepared to be educated with no distractions. I tell you, education is such a beautiful thing, and it's something that we should cherish here in this country, and we should make sure that our government do everything feasibly possible and everything we can do to support education. To me, education is a national security matter. And listen to me now. Listen to what I'm saying. If we do not have an educated population, how can we be competitive on a global scale? Simple question. But it brings us to reality. So therefore, it creates a national security situation. We can't continue to depend on our recruiting some of the best minds from other countries to come to America and become American citizens. We got to make sure that we are educating the best minds right here on the soil of the United States. And I'm happy to have with me for the first part of my show today a very good friend of mine. I tell you, he's certainly a role model and a pillar in this community, someone who has done quite a bit for a lot of folks. And don't look for no thank you, don't look for a pat on the back, is when we call him, he shows up. As a matter of fact, when I was down near Lake Bottom Park a couple weekends ago for the soapbox derby race, who did I see out there making sure that all of our children were safe and making sure that the perimeter was covered and making sure that everyone had a great time? None other than our Marshal Greg Countryman, my friend. All how right. you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you,
you know,
my friend?
Every time I'm in your presence, it's an honor, man. I tell
praise
you,
God.
You are just God. So phenomenal in how you operate and what you do, your calmness, your respect as an elected official, the respect that you show the people who vote for you faithfully every time you put your name on that ballot.
Yes.
You know, I know it's all God's favor. But
absolutely.
But you know, you have to. I know that every night you thank him for the blessings he's bestowed upon you.
Amen. Amen. Absolutely. I praise God all day, all night, and I wake up praising him.
Well, we'll appreciate you, and I do the same, and just keep me in your prayers, because your prayers seem like they get through very well. you are blessed.
The prayers of the prayers of the righteous are heard.
The prayers of the righteous are heard.
Yes.
And as I stated a little earlier, Greg, I don't think it's a secret, Marshal Countryman, that people in this community know that you are here for this community.
Absolutely.
You're here for all ages. You're here for our elderly population. You're here for our children. You're here for our teenagers. You're here for the younger professional population. I see you in so many different places, oftentimes outside of work hours, right, just contributing to the community, being that model elected leader. How do you find the time? I mean, you're everywhere.
Well, it's tough, but when you're a public servant, you have to serve, and I thank God for having such an understanding wife and family, because I have to be able to, you know, balance family time with that as well, because I do have a family. But besides that, I try to make myself available, because I am a public servant, and I don't care what the situation or what the event, I don't care if it's one person there. If we can make a difference in the life of someone or inspire someone, I want to be there to help do that.
Right, right. I was at Lemon Sawgrass, the restaurant here on Macon Road a few days ago, and I saw a marshal in there, and I went and spoke to him, and I explained to him. I was like, I know our marshal for one of your deputy marshals. And I was like, I know our marshal very well. He's a great guy, and I'm just glad he answered my calls when I call him. And he and I had a good laugh. We had not personally met before.
All right.
But before I left, I covered his tab, and he came
praise
over,
God.
And
thank
he was
you.
Like, you didn't have to do that. I was like, no, you work with a phenomenal team of people. You work with Great Country, and I'm going to do that because you guys do so much for us.
Thank you so much.
And we've seen the battles and the political situations, and I know it's hard sometimes to get additional funding, and you know the budgets are strapped here in the city. So we can do our part sometimes as citizens to further show folks like you in law enforcement that we appreciate what you do.
Yes.
And we're not opposed to you.
Thank you so much.
And, you know, and the reasonable minds, and especially leadership in law enforcement, where reasonable minds can be of great force and can be of great attribute to community unity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's what we need, community unity. But we'll talk about all that another day. I called you here.
Right. I would love to get back to that subject later. But we can do it later. But you started something there.
Well, we will definitely finish it. You know, there's a whole bunch of praises for you and your team there. And I just wanted to be known that we appreciate what you do. But we're talking about our kids getting ready to go back to school. And I know you have a couple programs that you run in a couple of our schools through the marshal's office.
Right.
And I just wanted to talk about them again and just remind our parents of how great these programs are and how, if they can, we need their students, their children to be engaged.
Right.
And to embrace mm-hmm. somebody like you who they can right. relate to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And who they see a lot. So let's talk a little bit about it. Your signature program is your junior marshal
program. Junior marshal program. That is a program that I started in 2005. I was elected in 2004, but but during that process, I made a covenant with God that if you place me in this position, that I will use my position to help those kids that were like me growing up. Growing up, I had a stuttering problem. I had a learning disability. Learning did not come easy to me. However, the kids within our junior marshal program, they're not all straight A kids. Mm-hmm. They're not all troubled kids, but they are kids that we can focus on with them: citizenship, leadership, mm-hmm. education, fun, and teamwork. And since the inception of the program, since 2005, we have worked with over 1,200 kids, and we've had a 100% success rate. We have not had issues of teen violence, gang activity, drug activity, truancy, teen pregnancy, any of those problems we have never had out of our kids. And it's actually a two-year program.
So how many schools do you have this program in right now?
We have every middle school in Muskogee County.
Every middle school. Okay. Do you operate any type programs in the elementary school arena?
We actually have DARE. We do the DARE program at Reese Road, and we do it at Waddell. Those were the two schools absent of them having someone to represent them for the DARE program. And so we actually do work there. Mm-hmm. We actually do something that is called Operation Safe School, that my deputies will, instead of them traveling the main roads, we travel through the back roads. If they have time, they will walk into a school and get with the principal and ask, is it all right for us to do a walkthrough? Because our kids need to see us during good times.
Right.
And oftentimes when they see a public safety officer in uniform, it's because something bad happened. Mm-hmm. And so if we can let them see that we're their friends, I think that can make a huge impact. If we see kids on the outside playing basketball, football, frisbee, or whatever, we will get out our vehicle and do that. Each one of my deputies have to make contact with three citizens every single day. We are a community-oriented public safety
agency.
Now, I want
to be clear on something. You just say each one of your deputies have to make at least three interactions with citizens per day.
Absolutely.
That's because of your leadership.
Absolutely.
That's because, and I will say it, you know, if you're uncomfortable because I don't want, you know, be on there bragging. No, you're not bragging. You're talking about what you're doing internally to make your officers in the community bond with each other.
Right.
That community unity. So this is why leadership matters.
Right. I mean, because when we look at what's happening nationally, mm-hmm. I want to make sure that as the head of the marshal's office, that we don't encounter the same kind of problems that other people encounter. And not saying that everyone is doing something wrong, but I want to take it a step further, mm-hmm. because if we're not 21st century thinkers, then somehow we can fall behind the eight ball. Mm-hmm. I want to be in front of the ball. Mm-hmm. I want to be a trendsetter. And everything that I've tried to do in office has been to glorify God, not to glorify great countrymen, right. because I can't do anything without God. But however, I want my deputies to be the best deputies that they can be, because when you see a marshal deputy, I want you to understand that that's your friend.
Right. And I tell you, I haven't encountered one yet where I've had an interaction and I felt negative about it.
Right.
It's always a very positive and meaningful interaction. And it reminds me, as my wife and I were coming back from out of town last week, actually a week from today, we were driving back from Houston, Texas. And my mother-in-law was in Jackson, Mississippi, and she was telling us from Jackson back to Columbus. Mm-hmm. And a cop got behind her in Selma, Alabama. Mm-hmm. And so I pulled over into the parking lot and she pulled in behind me. And of course, he went to her. And so I stopped there for a second and I saw him talking to her, asking her, well, are they with you? Because I'm sure he was concerned that I had stopped too. So I stepped out of the vehicle and I said, I'm a good little distance away, I would say at least about 6 parking spaces away. So I step out of the vehicle and I say, Mr. Officer, is everything okay? Because I was the lead vehicle. I know we were not speeding. And in a very aggressive and rude tone, he said to me, this is an active traffic stop. I need you to get back into your vehicle. I said, sir, I understand what this is. And I said, by the way, I'm an attorney licensed in 2 states. I know the law. I said, I know what it is. I said, but I'm going to respect your orders and I'm going to get back in my car. I said, but I want you to know I can stand here in this public space and watch you and not be in violation of a traffic stop. So I got back in the car because I didn't want any issues for my mother-in-law.
Right.
And I proceeded to continue to watch through the side window. Of course, my wife is in the back seat, almost freaking out because her mother is pulled over, mid-60 age woman, mm-hmm. driving a car that don't look like there's any type of illegal activity or anything going on. And so he asked her again. He was like, so he's an attorney? And she was like, yes, my son-in-law is an attorney. He was like, okay. So he got a car, went and ran a place, and was like, well, I pulled you over because you forgot to put on a turn signal when you switched lanes. So I'm just going to give you a warning this time, and I'm going to let you move on. And I appreciate him for just giving her the warning. But the thing that I think could have been better is when I ask him in a very professional, civil, respectful, soft tone, is everything all right? I even said, Mr. Officer.
Right.
He could have gently said back to me, yes, sir, everything's fine. Just give me a moment. Let me speak with the lady here, and you guys will be back on your way. And I would have done the same thing, got back in my car.
Right, right.
But he instantly became aggressive. He instantly jumped down my throat. It was like you were trying to instigate the situation. I'm like, that's not the way you should be interacting with general folks, and that's not what I get from the marshals here.
Right. I do I actually designed a training that is called The Art of Policing in the 21st Century. Mm-hmm. And policing is an art. And when you're dealing with the public, it is very, very critical that you try to build a bridge.
Right.
And in order to build a bridge, you have to build that bridge from both sides. And so, I hate that happened, and I hate that you experienced that. And but hopefully things will get better. And you know, and I think that as we improve our training, my deputies have to go through an 8 to 12 hour series of fair and impartial policing to understand biases. Mm-hmm. We all have different biases, and some can be culturally taught. Some can be that you just hate a person because of their gender or their nationality. But we want to put all those things on the table, and we want to talk about what triggers you to act a certain way. And so when you can put those things on the table, and when you can talk to other cultures about that, it helps to put everything out there. Because sometimes we are just programmed to respond a certain way. Mm-hmm. And we need to learn to assess a situation to see if it does perceive a threat to the officer or not. And not saying that that's what happened, but mm-hmm. sometimes we can become programmed. Mm-hmm. And if we see someone get out of the car, there's a typical response, get back in your car, or they may put the hand on the weapon. That's typical because that's a learned behavior.
Mm-hmm. I got you. And I totally understand that. And trust me, I'm very cognizant of the dangers that are out there.
Yes, sir.
I know that our law enforcement go through a lot. That's why I'm so supportive mm-hmm. of all of our law enforcement.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I'm a realist, too.
Mm-hmm.
Marshall Countryman, and just like you have bad lawyers, bad doctors, bad educators, bad engineers, there are bad law enforcement officers.
Absolutely.
And I wish there was a way in which we could test everybody to see does this person have a good heart.
Mm-hmm.
And are they really here because they love the community? Are they wanting to do the job? Or is this person, infiltrated with perceived biases
mm-hmm.
that's going to impact the way that they police? I mm-hmm. wish there was a way we can run a test like that on folks, but we can't. We have to mm-hmm. take people for their word. We have to trust that people are going to be fair. Most importantly, we have to believe that people will uphold the oath of office that they took.
Absolutely.
And so that's critical. So we have three major programs that mm-hmm. we're going to see continuing out of our marshal's office, Marshal Greg Countryman. That is our junior marshal program, our DARE program, and Operation Safe Schools. For anybody listening, Marshal Countryman, that would like to contribute or support your efforts in any kind of way, how can they get in contact with you?
They can always call 706-225-4385. That's the marshal's office. Or if they want to email me, they can email me at gcountryman@columbusga.org.
Okay, so those of you who was running to get your pens and your pencils and your paper, I'm going to repeat that for you. The number is 706-225-4385. And that's G Countryman at Columbus G at Columbus
GA
GA
dot org.
Dot org. All right, Marie, repeat that one more time. That's 706-225-4385, and that's G Countryman at ColumbusGA.org. If you would like to contribute to any of the programs that our marshal is doing within our school districts to help shape and grow and develop our children, and we're extremely appreciative for him for taking the time out to be in these spaces. He doesn't have to do this, but he's doing this because he loves our community and he loves our young folks, and he want to see Columbus be a better place. Again, that's the Junior Marshal Program, the DARE Program, or the Operation Safe School. Give him a call. Send him an email. Let him know that you would like to assist, or you want to give a small donation or whatever. We can accept those, and we can make sure that it goes to these programs to benefit these children. Marshal Countryman, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, sir,
to talk about these
for having
programs.
Me here.
I will have you back very shortly because
I look forward to that.
You, our conversation on some things, because you know every time I speak with you, I pick up nuggets of wisdom.
Amen.
Every time
praise
we
God.
Have a conversation.
Praise
so,
God.
We appreciate your due diligence. We appreciate your public service. We appreciate your sacrifice that you endure with your personal family and everything else to be of public service to us here in Columbus, Georgia.
Yes, sir, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This is Teddy Reese with Sunday Conversation. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit about movie making right here in Columbus, Georgia. So hold on. We'll be right back. Thank you.
When your car is in drive, put your phone in park. This is Harris Blackwood of the Governor's Office of Highway Safety. Starting July 1st, it will be against the law in Georgia for drivers to have a phone in their hand or on any part of their body. You can only make and receive calls if you have an earpiece, headset, use your speakerphone feature, or if your phone is connected to your vehicle or electronic watch. Videos, texting, emails, and social media are all still illegal when driving. To learn more about the new hands-free law, visit headsupgeorgia.com. Putting down our phones will save lives, maybe yours.
Welcome back to Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. We're here for the second half of the show, and as I told you at the top of the air, we're gonna have an exciting conversation today. We had our marshal, Greg Countryman, on the show with us, and now I feel special. I'm sitting amongst someone that is a celebrity maker. You know, people talk about king makers. You have celebrity makers too, and it's my man Ty Manz is in the building, the writer and producer, and some of you. I'm sure a lot of you know exactly who he is. Last year, he had a movie in theaters all over the country called A Question of Faith. It's on Netflix right now. If you need to go take a look at it, it's there. He was here in Columbus, Georgia, filming a movie by the name of My Brother's Keeper, and he graciously stopped by to say hello to us here in the studio, and we're so glad to have him in that movie. And I want you to look for it now. It's coming. My Brother's Keeper. There's a lot of local people in that movie from Columbus that were able to make the set and have their first time in front of a camera. So I know that was exciting for a lot of folks. But we had Keisha Knight Pullum here in town. You guys remember Rudy from the Cosby Show. We had T.C. Stallings. What movie was he in again?
War Room.
War Room. That's right. Joey Lawrence and Greg Allen Williams. So I'm going to go ahead and get my friend Ty Manz on the line with me on the air here. Ty, how you doing, my friend?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Brother, thank you for bringing this production to Columbus, Georgia.
Yeah, I was happy to do so. This great town to make movies. I wish more people would come here, and I think in the future they will.
Well, we're still working on it. You know, with the state of Georgia moving towards being the Hollywood of the East, How is that, from someone who's in the industry, is that really shaping up to the hype that we hear as lame? I mean, I'm a lawyer. I don't know nothing about movies and stuff. Is it really getting to that point?
Yeah. Look, it's a $9 billion industry in the state of Georgia right now.
Billion.
Yeah, that's with a B. Bravo.
Wow.
So there's a lot of great movies being made here. All the Marvel movies are made here.
Mm-hmm.
So Columbus should be trying to get a little piece of that, and I think they will down the road. I certainly hope so. It will make life really easy for guys like myself who are filmmakers locally to get a part of that.
Now Ty, what was your... What was the greatest factor in you coming to Columbus to make this film?
Really, I just wanted to see if I could do it. I've done small projects here in Columbus, but this was the first feature film where we'd have 50-plus crew members and another 23-plus actors. 30-day project, 60-day from pre-production to wrap. I just believed that we could do it. I just felt like we could get enough people here in Columbus with enough skill sets to augment a trained crew and a professional crew. And it was a risk, but I'm glad I did it because it paid off greatly. The city opened their doors up. We had so many wonderful business owners. Mm-hmm. reach out and extend and help us. We had over 4,000 locals sign up to be extra. So, yeah, it was a great time. It worked. In my opinion, it worked.
Well, I'm glad you did it because there was a lot of buzz all over the city. People were reposting the news article and messages on Facebook saying, hey, you know, you want to, I even heard it at the barbershop. You know, I had my barber.
Hey, it made it then if it's at the barbershop.
Hey, I go to Close Cuts over there and I had Darryl Roberts talking about, hey, I'm going to see if I can become an extra. How long they going to be out there? I'm like, hey, bro, you need to cut my hair before you go.
That's right. That's right.
But this was exciting. And the last excitement I remember on this level, Ty, was when I was actually living downtown. That was before I got married. And they were filming, I want to say it was the Fast and Furious.
Yeah, there. Yeah.
And what was so amazing, I live right there in the Eagle and Phoenix Loft by the river. Mm-hmm. So I watched them flip the car off the bridge and do the animated explosion.
That's right.
And then they took down the state of Georgia side, state line, because you know, right down the river, right. They put the state of New York.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was like
movie magic, man.
Setting for upstate New York, but we're right here in Columbus, Georgia.
Yeah, movie magic. That's what we do.
But John, you brought that same excitement to Columbus. Please tell me you'll come back.
Yeah, yeah. The plan for me is to do at least 2, maybe 3 more movies here before the scenery catch up with you, before it starts looking like the same place.
Right.
But my goal is to do at least 2, maybe 3 more movies here in Columbus.
Well, you heard it first here, Columbus. Ty Mann say he is coming. Ty Mann's the man say he is coming back to Columbus at least 2 or 3 more times. I'm going to try to get in your next movie.
Yeah, yeah. Come on in, man. Yeah, that's right. Doors are always open.
Now, how did you get in this industry?
Well, you know, I'm retired military. Mm-hmm. I did 24 years in the Army. Mm-hmm. And then I went into the civilian industry for 10 years. Mm-hmm. But even during those periods, I was always into the creative world. Mm-hmm. So I was always writing. I taught myself how to write movie scripts and was blessed to meet some people that helped mentor me along, and just got to the point where, you know, people said, hey, I'll give you some money for that script, or can you help me write this script? I'll pay you to do that. And it just kept growing from there. And I got to the point where I decided, okay, I'm at this stage in my career now, mm-hmm. where I only want to produce what I'm writing. I don't want to let anyone else do that. Mm-hmm. So this is actually the first feature film that I wrote that I actually executive produced. So from this step forward, you know, we'll just take the stuff I write and put it out there and make it happen.
Now, I know this is what you do. This is your area. As Erykah Badu said, you know, I'm serious about my craft.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
I know this, your crap.
Yeah.
You're so calm and collective in here, brother, today.
Yeah, yeah.
You just chill. I'm like, how is brother running movie set so chill? So is that like an alter ego or something? You know how Beyonce, she got, what she call her? I can't think of Beyonce alter ego right now.
Yeah,
oh, man.
You
got an alter ego, bro?
No, man. I just, this is who I am. You know, I just try to treat people the right way and. Mm-hmm. And thankful to God every day that I wake up and have my wonderful wife and my 2 boys doing great things out there. So I look at every, I even being here today on radio, I'm appreciative of that. I'm thankful. So
absolutely.
For me, I'm more thankful that I get these opportunities. This isn't about me. This is the opportunity that you're giving me to come on and talk about what we do. And so I'm very appreciative of that. So
well, you know, well, it's well deserved. When you come into our community and you're willing to share opportunities with the people of Columbus, this is what we do.
Yeah.
We embrace those that embrace us.
And you have. And I tell you, the city really embraced this project. We had guys like Mr. Allen Bean over at the tavern, mm-hmm. just open their doors up to us. Come on in, film whatever you need.
Wow.
Allen even opened up his home. Allowed us to put his family in a hotel for 2 days so we could mm-hmm. film at his house.
Is he married to Betsy?
Yes, I think that's it.
Yeah, because she had it on Facebook. You know, she runs the community foundation.
You know, the Piedmont
Great
Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife works for Piedmont.
Opened up the doors, let us film there. So, and there's just wonderful people here in this town. They just embraced this project, and we had a lot of fun. And I think everyone here, the actors, the crew, everyone just had a lot of fun with Columbus.
Now, I'm getting a little bit of who is the person, Ty Mann. Where did you grow up?
I'm a country boy. I grew up in West Virginia.
Really?
Yeah.
Country mama.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There you go. Mountaineer fan for life.
Yeah, yeah, West Virginia, mountain mama.
That's right.
I went to a conference in Charleston, West Virginia when I was an undergraduate at Albany State. We had the NASAP, which is like the HBCU Leadership Conference.
Okay.
At we were at, was it West Virginia State?
Probably up in that, Charleston area. That's right.
But when you're coming into Charleston and you're weaving through the mountains, then you make a turn and you hit this big bridge and cross the river, and this beautiful city just comes out of nowhere. Yeah. I was like, this is a hidden jewel.
Yeah, yeah. I'm born and raised in West Virginia, man.
West Virginia.
Went into the military '79,
Did you ever think that you would be making movies or?
Well, you know, it's funny. I get asked questions like that sometimes, and I try to answer them in the only fair way that I know how without sounding arrogant. Because I always tell people, don't pray for something and then be surprised when it happens.
Oh, my. Come on now.
I'm not surprised because, you know, I prayed for it. I prayed to always get better in my writing. I prayed to always get better with my network and meeting the right people in the industry, knowing, God giving me vision to say, okay, that's not the person to be hanging around. And even though that person could move your needle, having the conviction to still walk away. So I prayed and I prayed to get better in every aspect of this. So I'm kind of not surprised. I'm not surprised because I believe God would deliver in his time.
Right.
When it came time when he said, okay, I can trust you now with this. I think you're ready. Here it is. So, now I'm just trying to run with it as fast as I can.
You know, I've often heard Tyler Perry talk about his struggles in the industry and the difficulty of being embraced by those that came before you. And to the extent to where there were even times when he felt he was attacked.
Yeah.
You know, for his method of delivering his craft and his talent. Have you found it difficult?
I'm still early. If you look at where I am in my career, I'm still very early in my career. I've had some things written up by critics in about my writing style or, about my last movie. I just take it with a grain of salt because you read things that people write, and the way I look at it, I only pray that one person looks at what we do and go, man, that movie helped me. Then I could care less if 1,000 critics said it was horrible. We reached that one person that may at that point needed some help. So,
well, you know, my grandma used to tell us that opinions are like, you know what, everybody got one.
Everybody
and even a critic
is offering
their opinion.
That's right. I respect them, but it's their opinion.
It's your opinion.
Right.
And
right.
Someone else may see it differently.
That's
but
right.
We do understand the impact that they can have on the industry. But clearly, no one tried to take you out because here you are.
Yeah, no. Look, here I can't let that happen. And I don't think God will let that happen.
Absolutely.
So I'm just.
No weapons formed.
That's right. No weapons formed.
No weapons formed. Well, that is so amazing. Now, as far as this production here, when should we expect to see this in the theaters or on some type
we still have about 4, maybe 5 months worth of work to do. Even though we're done filming, now we have to get into the editing and the music and the score. And that's going to be, that's at least a 4-month period. So right now we're thinking February 2019 is what we're looking at in theatrical.
Something I've always wondered, Todd, do your actors have to learn every line of the script? Like, does it actually have to be memorized, or can they get close to the lines and kind of paraphrase a little bit and it's okay?
You know, that kind of depends. Now, the short answer is yes, they have to pretty much know what those lines are in that script, and not only what the lines are, what the action that correlate with those lines, whether they're sitting here together talking, walking out a door, they have to know that. But some producers, some directors want it line for line, word for word. I'm kind of a little loose on that. As long as you're in the general area and you're sticking to certain things, I'm okay if you say a word or two that's different. But it's key that you know the line, because what I say, if I'm reading my line, the last thing I say cues what you have to say. So if you're sitting there waiting and waiting for to hear my line, mm-hmm. and you don't hear it, then you're late coming in and we have to cut out. So not only do you have to know your lines, you have to know my lines also.
Absolutely.
So you know when the key ends.
I got you. I got you.
It's pretty important.
So for young people out there listening to the show today, that may aspire to be a writer or a producer or maybe even an actor, what kind of advice would you give them to help them get started early on their preparations for that field?
I think I can speak more to the writing aspect, but I get a lot of calls from people asking them about writing. And I tell everyone, hey, you have to learn and understand that a screenplay has a footprint. Mm. There's things that's supposed to be happening throughout pages in your screenplay. Mm-hmm. And if you don't understand that, then you'll never really grasp how to write that screenplay. So I try to tell folks, go really get into the footprint of understand what's supposed to be happening in by page 10 and by page 15 and by page whatever. Because if you don't understand that, what should happen at page 10, you may have happening at page 25, and it's too late. You see, so I tell folks, knuckle down, really try to understand the footprint, understand the anatomy of a screenplay. I'll be at the Chattahoochee Valley Writers Conference on the 29th of September, and I think I'm doing like a 3-hour segment, and it's going to be about that, how to, identify that footprint, where to go, and how to learn how to write that. Because when I do rewrites for clients now, I only have them send me their first 10 pages. Because if their first 10 pages not right, then I know the rest of the movie won't be right. And that's how important those first 10 pages are. So when they call me or write me and I agree to take the work, I say, okay, send me your first 10 pages. If they're not right, then we spend most of our time just trying to get those first 10 pages right, because that's how important they are in the movie.
So when you say the footprints, do you mean like the image that I have in my head of footprints in the sand and need to walk you along? Or?
Well, no, what I mean is the structure and the format. There are certain things you have to do in a screenplay in the first 10 pages.
Okay.
You
got to
tell us what the movie's about. Mm-hmm. You got to tell us who the good guy is. You got to give us some idea of the time frame of when this movie is taking place. And then by page 20, there's certain other things that you need to tell us by then. By page 30, there's something you have to do. And so throughout that screenplay, there are things that you're supposed to be telling your audience what's happening.
I have seen some movies that, when you first watch it, they come out the gate like, bam, and you're like mesmerized the entire show.
Right.
And then there's some, and you'll hear folks describe it. It starts a little slow,
but
once you get into it, and it makes me think of a hook. Like, you hook them early, or do you take a long time to hook them?
You should hook them in the first 10 pages.
Wow.
Really, in those first 10 pages, you should be sitting there watching your screen going, okay, I know what this movie's about. Now you're waiting to see what happens and how they get to the end of solving the problem.
Now, I know this can vary, but is the first 10 pages like 10 minutes of the show, 30 minutes of the show?
Typically, the rule of thumb is one page of a screenplay is 1 minute in a movie.
Interesting.
And you want to, it depends. If it's a dramatic movie, you want to be between 90 and 100 pages. It gets really hard for people to sit in a theater for a 2-hour drama.
Right.
Now, if you're making an action movie like a Marvel movie, who cares? They'll go 2.5 hours, and you don't care.
They'll stay.
So it just depends, right?
They have their audience of people.
That's right.
That wants to see that.
They'll want to see that, and we'll sit and see that.
Absolutely.
But for the type of movies that I'm writing right now, I try to keep them between 90 and 95 pages.
I'm a very analytical thinker. I mean, My BS is in computer science. Yeah. I have a master's in public administration and a JD. Yes. And a black belt and Lean Six Sigma. Yeah. So that shows you how my mind works, right? So I think about everything. I recently watched a segment on Netflix that followed eight characters. Mm-hmm. So eight different stories had to be told, eight different foundations had to be laid, and they had to do it on where on that first show I would want to come back and watch it again.
Right, right.
I thought that was difficult.
Yeah, I mean, God bless them. Because I usually have three stories going on at a time in my work. I try to run three stories throughout the whole movie, and then they'll combine themselves near the end of the movie for it all to make sense. Mm-hmm. But for eight, yeah, God bless them. That's a challenge.
Well, I watched the entire series.
Yeah, that's great writing. That's what I call that. That's great writing.
I'll share with you off the air.
Yeah, because that's hard.
We here talking about Ty Manns today. I'm not here to advertise for nobody else. Yeah. Well, Ty, again, I want to thank you for coming by today. When you're having a good conversation, you always run short on time. And I just want to thank you. You know, I'm not an elected official, nobody important in this city. But, you know, I think if people could come here today, they would say thank you. So I'm going to say thank you on behalf of the city of Columbus for considering us and for being here and for bringing your talents and your energy and the possibility of show business and movies being filmed here, continuing that path that we're on.
Yeah.
Because someone may see your stuff and say, hey, I want to go to Columbus too.
I hope so. I really hope so. That's the idea, is that people will look at what we're doing here and go, yeah, okay, they're doing it, let's go do it. I mean, we probably spent a couple $100,000 in the community over the shoot, so that's small pennies compared to what some of these other big projects do. So if we can lead the way on that,
that's a lot of money for a lot of folks locally, though.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money, bro.
But I appreciate you, man. You are important because you give guys like myself a voice. So I think you're very important. I appreciate you because we get a chance to talk about what we're doing and keep people interested in what we're doing. So
very appreciative. Keep us informed here at David Broadcasting, and
absolutely
give them to get the information to me of the movie and the track, because we want to make sure that Columbus is front, set, and center when My Brother's Keeper comes out.
We're going to premiere right here in Columbus.
Wow.
The big premiere will be right here in Columbus.
I will go to that premiere, but I promise you I'm going to have to see it a second time. I can already see it now. There I go right there. Y'all are right there to make it. I don't miss half of the movie.
That's right. We'll be all right with that.
But I want to live in that excitement too. I want to experience that one. Ty Manns, thank you so much for
coming
by.
Thank you.
This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. We have with us today our Marshall Greg countryman and writer-producer Ty Manns, right here in Columbus, Georgia, coming to embrace our city and film right here in the city, and we're greatly appreciative of that. So be on the lookout for My Brother's Keeper. It's coming out. You may see a neighbor, you may see a cousin, you may see your friend. If you see your spouse, that's a problem, because you should have known about that. But we're looking forward to My Brother's Keeper. Y'all have a good Sunday, and we will see you next Sunday. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. The views and expressions of Sunday Conversations are not the views of Davis Broadcasting Incorporated, advertisers, nor their staff. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversation? Come and join me, Teddy Reese. Send me an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.